Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Way We Nerd. I'm Daniel Villalobos. Next to me is
Kyle Bound.
Across from him,
Josh Moorhead.
Next to him,
Joshua Potter.
And we got some fun stuff to talk about today. We got a movie review of a movie we saw a week ago. Actually, is it a week ago or a week and a half now?
A week and a half, almost 2 weeks.
Yeah, we forgot to talk about it last week because we got a little too heated in our Star Trek discussion, which will probably turn into another heated discussion when we start talking about those Batman v. Superman reviews. Because they are, of course,
Supreme Court case.
They, of course, mixed.
Plessy v. Ferguson.
Think about
it. It's about illegal immigration.
It's so funny that you mentioned that, because I was just reading an article that was saying that there was a movie that they had to change the title for whatever year Kramer versus Kramer came out. And the movie was supposed to be called, Superman. And they sued him. It was Superman versus Superman. That's what it was called. It was going to be Superman 3, because you know how they have that scene in Superman 3 where he fights his evil self?
Mm-hmm.
So that was going to be
a horse.
No, but that was going to be a bigger focus in the movie where there's going to be two Supermen, the evil Superman and good Superman.
Did he have a goatee?
No, but he had red eyes. Or no, he never goatee. He had the 5 o'clock shadow though, which Superman never has. But anyway, so the original title was going to be Superman v. Superman, or is it Superman? Is it Kramer versus Kramer? It's Kramer versus Kramer.
Kramer versus
V, right?
Kramer.
I'm getting the V to him in my head. But anyway, Kramer versus Kramer said no. You can't try to bank on our Oscar win or whatever, and they changed the title. But
interesting.
Probably better that they did, because Superman 3 is just fine, even though the movie's not that fine.
No, it's really not.
But I still enjoy it for what it is. It is a goofball comedy. Richard Lester came in and goofed it up, and that's what he does. I mean, Superman 2 is, like, I don't know if you guys have seen the Superman the Donner cut, but a much better movie. At least it would have been if Donner was allowed to complete it. But
wait, what were we talking about?
Batman vs. Superman. you want to talk
Space
about the
now.
So let's get the Batman vs. Superman stuff
Love
out there
it.
Already. So I'm pretty sure that Batman vs. V Superman is going to be better than Superman 3. That's my prediction.
I will agree.
Yeah.
I will not disagree. Now, will it be better than Superman 4?
That there's no way, no Superman movie, Batman movie could ever be better than that one. So that had John Cryer in it.
There you go. I mean, what else do you need?
These initial reviews...
He was half a man years later.
These initial reviews seem to be pointing to, at least Kyle and I's initial, not dread, but...
Concern.
Anti-hope.
Concern.
Yeah,
concern. Concern's the best
word. Yeah. Anti-hope.
Our Ted Cruz.
Yeah, our Ted Cruz. That it's just too much on one plate. And that plate is made out of paper instead of...
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, a lot of the there's a few real scathing reviews, but I have a feeling those are the people that didn't like Man of Steel or don't like Zack Snyder's style, and they weren't going to like it anyway. And then there's the reviews that are like saying that it's like, I think you Josh, what's the name of the reviewer that you like to read? Let's quote him.
Scott Mendelson.
Scott Mendelson. I've heard him before. I do like actually
Forbes.
Like him. I like him.
Forbes.
I don't always agree with him, but I do like him and I trust him. He started off with a review with saying it's the most beautiful superhero movie you've ever seen, but it's very little substance in the middle, very little character development, very thin
characters
story.
Characters are relentlessly depressing.
Yes, except for Lex Luthor. Apparently, Lex Luthor is a lot of fun, according to Mr. Mendelson. So, the funny thing is, a lot of the reviews that I'm reading, most of these people's complaints were something I wanted. I don't know if wanted to be part of the movie is the right word, but they wouldn't. They're not going to bother me.
I hope I'm wrong, but it sounds like a bad night of speed dating.
I'm reading too much.
You see 100 people. Some of them are pretty, but it doesn't come together or anything. It's just too much.
But then there's a few reviews out there that I've seen, and then I don't know how famous these critics are, but they have check marks as in their name, so I assume they're well known, that are absolutely loving the movie. One of them said it's the best superhero movie he's ever seen. I mean, there's other ones that are just saying how Batman is awesome. Affleck's Batman's awesome. Wonder Woman steals the show. And
that critic's name was Zack Snyder.
Okay.
Not Zack Snyder's
just so you get the score here, they really are mixed out there, but Josh is reading all the negative reviews where I'm reading.
No, I'm being, I mean,
you're not.
Within the negative reviews, there are positive, they're pointing out the positive aspects. Within the positive reviews, they're pointing out the negative aspects.
But
reviews are mixed. I mean, I think the fair thing would be to say that
it is, and that's
mixed.
Exactly what I said.
It's at 40 right now. Didn't you say that?
42 was last I saw. The average
score
was about
like
5.1.
Right. So I'm just bracing myself for an imperfect.
And that's what I do. And I was telling Kyle earlier, this actually helps me. This is probably going to lower my expectations because my expectations were so high before. But
the thing that irritates me most is that, from what little I've read, is that my worst fear seems to be coming true, which is that it's not Batman v Superman. It's that one scene we've seen in all the trailers and the rest of the movie. Like, there isn't three different battles. Like, it's just that one fight. And at the end of the fight, they go, well, what if we punch Darkseid instead? Which, of course, that was going to be the plot all along, but I wanted them to see a little bit more of what the title of the movie is.
Well, yeah, I guess we'll see. I mean, the thing is like, you made a point, and maybe the reviews are contradicting your point in a way, but you made a point as to saying every single trailer we've seen has been, like, looks like the same three locations. Like, right, it's been at the party, it's been at that battle, yeah. And then it's been the cave.
So it felt like there's a lot they're not showing us, but what the reviews are saying, that's not necessarily
a good thing.
So,
oh,
yeah,
okay. Well, I don't know. Like I said, some of the ones I was reading were very, very glowing, and some are absolutely hating it. So, and some are somewhere in the middle, like Kyle was saying, where that they are a negative review, but there's sprinkled positives in there. My hope only is this. I don't really care about. Honestly, I don't really care about the Justice League movies. I do want to see them. Don't get me wrong. I want to see Momoa as Aquaman. Trust me, I really do. And Wonder Woman's going to happen regardless. Yeah, I just want to make sure Batman Affleck gets to do his Batman. That's all I want.
I think that's all I want to see that too. But I think I think I'm gently prodding you because apologetics works both ways. There's people that are not big Snyder fans, so they're going to come in with sourpuss faces. But then there's also you might be too forgiving. So what I'm saying is, if it's shitty, you're going to have to admit that it's shitty.
I will. But I am more forgiving just because I'm not a film critic. I don't ever paint myself as one. I just, when I go to the movies, critics would rather, and I know this is, I'm not saying critics don't love to go to the movies and love to enjoy movies, but critics have way more fun when they're bagging on a movie than when they're not. And anybody would. It's more fun. The jokes come better when you're bagging on
it's true. But I think a majority of critics, when I was a critic, what I looked for, whether I liked what the movie was trying to do or not, is I tried to be fair in grading the movie on did it achieve what it set out to do.
Yeah.
And it seems like the majority of the reviews right now aren't like, this movie's great, but I don't like its premise, so it's poop. It's like, this movie's not achieving what it set out to achieve, and the DC universe might be in peril.
Yeah, well, I think there's, I don't know. We'll see
in a day.
Yeah,
what happens.
I mean,
I'm so excited.
If the movie makes a ton of money, and it keeps making money, regardless of the critics, like, Man of Steel did enough. Like, the critics were divided there, but it did enough business to get this going.
I think what we're going to see is
Pacific Rim 2 did enough business to get going. You know?
Well, in China.
Yeah, but I'm just saying.
I think what we're going to see is if the reviews hold up the way that they are, is there's going to be a $30 million Thursday night, a $70 million Friday or whatever. Like, I'll have a big first weekend, but then there's going to be a precipitous drop off.
There will be. But the good one thing it does have going for it is it doesn't have many challengers. Like, if I looked at the slate for the next couple of weeks, and there's not much coming out until Jungle Book on April 15th. So it doesn't have a lot to go against. So this is tends to be a slow movie time anyway. Yeah. So you're right. It should have a big drop off. Even if it, like, I my prediction is 175 at the highest. I want it to make 200 million, but I think 175 is as high as it goes. I don't think it'll go as low as 140. I think maybe 150, 160.
If it goes from 175 opening weekend to 70 the next, then there's definitely a problem. That's when the people...
Yeah, that's bad word of mouth.
Right, that's when the people where we're at right now start wringing their hands. Because what they need is a sustained Avengers-like performance.
If it goes... But if you just go 10 million more than that, if it just goes down to 80 or 90, that's only half. And that's not the
big deal. But that's still...
That's not... Half is not... Half should be expected.
No, the percentage
especially
is
a movie
that,
like this.
But the... We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Plus... Worldwide. We got to remember worldwide. Batman and Superman are a lot more recognizable characters than any other comic book characters in the world. So, we'll see what happens. And then, the world is obviously more forgiving as far as those kind of movies than American critics.
My thought process on critics in general right now is, how many people actually listen to critics, too? I'm asking that because I don't generally listen to a lot of critics.
No, we don't because we're our own critics.
Yeah, well, but I mean, there are some critics that I usually align with, and I've found over the years that okay, you guys kind of are attuned to my movie sensibilities and the things that I enjoy, so I can read what you're writing about a movie and say, oh, okay, this is how you feel, so I'm probably going to feel this way, and then I can make a decision if I still want to go see it or not. Most of the time, I do. I go see it so that I can form my own opinion on something because I think that's always better. But I don't know. It's just an interesting.
Most people aren't attached to individual critics like they used to be, but more people are attached to blogs and the zeitgeist. And the zeitgeist is created by critics.
That's
fair. And we still attribute ourselves to that because we'll spend the weeks leading up or months leading up to movies coming out being like, oh, we really want to see that. But then when they come out and they don't take hold critically or financially, we let them fall away. We had to go out of our way to see Eddie the Eagle after we were really hyped about it.
Yeah.
I had to go out of my way to see
Whiskey
Tango Foxtrot.
Oh, you saw it? Dang, I want to see that.
But it was not that great. But, I mean, that's the effect, is that you have this. It's the general awareness, not the specific.
True.
Nobody says.
It's the urgency.
That's
yeah.
Fair.
Nobody
yeah.
says the guy from Time Out of New York said blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
People have a general. Like, my friends that aren't huge movie buffs. One of them that is actually, that's been a Batman fan his whole life, he texted me today, he's like, if this movie doesn't crack 40, I'm not seeing it.
40%?
Yeah.
Well, he's an idiot. But if he's that big of a Batman fan, you should see him regardless of
the Batman. But I'm just saying, that's the general sense of that.
Well, that's okay.
It's like TV, like if people aren't talking, a lot of people are talking about it.
I shouldn't say
I'll go out of my way to watch it, even if it wasn't something that appealed to me to begin with. But if it was something that appealed to me to begin with, but nobody's talking about it, I'm like, forget it.
As a man who knows extremes, because I go to them too often, that is an extreme to say you're not going to go see your lifelong character in a movie just because 39% of the critics.
No, I agree, but I'm saying that's the effect on the general public.
I agree. Yeah. I think it's also, but and hopefully, like, Hail Caesar is a good example because that. Was mixed. That I think that was 50-something% on Rotten Tomatoes. Maybe it might have got it past 60 finally, but it was at 50% when I looked on the first weekend. But it wasn't as critically lauded as we thought it should be. All of us and loved the hell out of it.
Especially massive movies. Massive movies. And that's why, I mean, it's going to have that opening night. But if you have opening night and first day, and especially the fanboys come out of it and go, their aunts aren't going to go see it. Your mom's not going to go see it.
Yeah.
Your neighbor isn't going to go see it. That doesn't... The people that go to movies 4 or 5 times a year will then go, oh, I heard it's not that good, I'm staying home.
I'll
wait for Civil War.
I always just hope that when people do look at reviews, they actually read the review rather than just the
Hail Caesar is 84%.
That's why I thought it was much higher.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
The audience did not like it as much.
Audience,
it's a very inside Hollywood.
Right. That's the rating that I was looking at. The audience is like 54%.
Audience is like 46.
Yeah.
And again, that movie couldn't get box office even with its stars because...
Yeah.
The general consensus.
Well, Cohen's
right. Most people went and saw it and said,
right.
"Nah, you guys don't need to go see it."
Cohen's a very niche and very, very, very. I wouldn't say Hollywood only, but I mean they're like.
But when they
like
take
Hollywood
off,
sensibilities.
Like, "Oh, brother, we're out thou." That's because even the general person goes and goes, "Well, it was kind of weird but fun," and they tell everybody,
"Yeah.
It was weird but fun."
Yeah.
So that's what the zeitgeist. Has
What is their biggest money maker? Were There Will Be Blood?
Yeah.
I mean, not
Urban.
Like Country for Old Men.
Probably, yeah.
Could be.
It's just interesting.
Anyway, so
the world of critiquing
just
things.
People just when you go out there read the entire the critic wants you to. They don't want you just read their little splash title or their stars. They want you to read the whole article. So read the whole article but then go out and make the judgment yourself. Anyway, so moving on, there is a little bit of Star Wars news. I mean, there always is a little bit. We haven't got to talk. I don't remember if last week that the information came out yet, but apparently the three finalists have come out for Han Solo. Miles Teller coming out and talking about how he's off the list.
As he should be.
Yeah.
Never seen the Star Wars movies, Mr. Miles
Teller. Exactly.
Said,
that's
so.
Exactly.
Also full
of
crap.
Either lying or he was homeschooled on
he talked like he was like, they asked me if I wanted to be a Han Solo. And I was like, what's a Han Solo?
Yeah, that sounds like Miles Teller.
He is.
Yeah, Miles Teller's a little bit. Yeah, Miles Teller's the kind of guy that probably was made fun of in high school because he acted too cooler than he was, and he was that one nerd that thought he was the cool guy.
I love him in certain things, but he must rub
people
the wrong way.
He's a great actor. Don't get me wrong, he's talented as hell. But
like the dude that made Whiplash kicked him off his next project.
Yeah, I think he's a little bit of a LaBeouf. Not quite crazy as LaBeouf, but he's just, you know, like, because he's very, like, LaBeouf's talented too, but he's just nuts.
But he's not on the list.
He's not. Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Right,
thank goodness.
We're boring, Kyle. We're moving on. The three on the list are Taron Egerton, I can't say his name, Alden.
Alden Ehrenreich.
Who were my top two faves.
Yes, yeah, I love those two. I'd be fine with both those two. Yeah. Both those two guys. He's from Hail Caesar. If you guys haven't seen Hail Caesar, we've obviously raved about it here. Go see it. He's one of the best parts.
Yeah.
If not the best part, and that's not saying a negative. Trust me, because the rest of the movie is really good too. And the third is a gentleman named Jack Rayner, who I'm not as familiar with, but he was in Transformers 4.
Yeah, I don't want it to be him for that reason.
But you can't blame Transformers 4 on him.
You know what, though?
You can blame Transformers 4 on everyone.
I guess it's bad that I don't remember him. I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
I remember the character being there. I just don't remember his
performance. It's not the best material. Yeah, it's not the best material to work with.
Yeah.
But when I watched that movie, I was like, well, I'm really enjoying Mark Wahlberg right now. Yeah. Like
we got a Transformer here.
Yeah, he could have shown me some kind of spark. I was like, oh, I'm enjoying T.J. Miller before they blew him up 15 minutes into the movie. Like,
I wish he seemed like
Jai Courtney, who Jai Courtney's like
generic white
guy. I'm a muscular white guy. What else do you want? Like, well, personality here.
Yeah, poor Jai. He hasn't been able to. He could probably act, but the dude has not gotten a role yet that helps him. But you're right about Jack. What if they see something? I mean, because I trust.
I'm sure they must. But
I always forget the second guy's name. Phil Lord and help me out here.
Chris Miller.
Yeah,
that's an easier name to remember too. Chris Miller and Phil Lord. They must see something in him if he's on the list. I mean, they saw literally 1,500 actors was the rumored number I heard. Pretty much every actor from the ages 24 to 32, like tested for this friggin' movie. So even Dave Franco was one of the finalists at one time. I love Dave Franco, but I don't really want to see him as Han Solo.
He could star in a Han Solo spoof.
He could, but I mean, he probably could. His brother's really talented, so I don't know.
Yeah, no.
Rubbed off on him.
No.
But yeah, Kyle bags on that idea.
Yeah.
There's also rumors out there that there's two or three more on the list that haven't been made public, that they're keeping close to the vest. I personally think he's already cast. They're just waiting to announce.
Well, he might already be cast because there's a rumor going around this week that I hope isn't true. That he has a cameo in Rogue One, which wouldn't make any fucking sense.
No.
Yeah, I heard that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they would only be a shoo-in wink to the audience, but the only thing you could possibly do with him is have him run across a rebel somewhere and know him, and that's it.
It's not story context. It's the fact that you can't put this guy on screen and say 4 weeks later he looks like Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
It's you
can't connect him with that.
But the thing is the movies are going to take place right before. The trilogy is supposed to end with him, kind of getting into the rebellion or whatever. Like,
well, it's not even a trilogy right now.
They want it to be.
Regardless, it doesn't take place the same time that I thought.
Because they already have comic books coming out. That's the other thing I was going to talk about. There's a Han Solo comic book coming out that supposedly leads into the Han Solo movie. And it comes out, I think, in a few weeks. And it takes place already after he's met Chewie. So, the comic book, at least. So, I don't know. But that
I don't
also
know how much I'd buy into that either, because I'm sure one of the big story points of the movie will be, this is how I met Chewie, and this is how we start going on adventures.
All right.
I would agree. It would surprise me if they didn't cover that.
Right.
I mean,
I agree too.
The thing is, we have from like teenage Han Solo to A New Hope, there's about a decade worth of material. He's about 10 years older than Luke and Leia.
Right, at least.
Starts.
Yeah.
How much different did you look from 19 to 30?
Different enough that if you set the movie 10 years earlier,
it can work,
I think. Yeah. It's when you connect it timeline-wise that close.
Yeah, that abruptly.
You know, like, if the Han Solo trilogy ended with him walking into the cantina on Mos Eisley,
you'd be like, what the shit?
Yeah. You'd be a little weird.
Yeah. You know what? I just realized the Han Solo book is not what's supposed to lead into the comic book. Is not supposed to lead into the movie. It's the Life Debt trilogy. There's a Life Debt trilogy coming out about Chewie and Han.
Like a book trilogy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is supposed to deal with Han and Chewie meeting, but I agree with you guys. I don't know why they wouldn't do that on screen, why they would do that in a book form. Unless the book takes place after the Solo movie.
Well, that's what I would assume.
I mean, if that trilogy led up to him walking into the cantina, that's fine. That's right. It's a book.
The book trilogy. I don't mean,
you're not seeing somebody walk in and then somebody else be inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think personally the good end of the trilogy, because we don't know when he lost the Millennium Falcon to Lando, or, I mean, Lando lost the Millennium Falcon to him. If the trilogy ended at that part and they made it like 5 or 6 years before New Hope kind of thing.
That'd be okay, too.
I just would love for the movie to lead into what we know a little bit. Not a lot of it.
I mean, the question is just going to be with the movie is if it's, is it an origin story where it's like he's going to, at the end of the first act, the inciting incident is him rescuing Chewbacca.
Right.
You know, like he's in the Imperial Academy.
Yeah.
And he sees the Wookiee slaves and he frees them and rescues Chewbacca. And so then him and Chewbacca are together and then he hiding out on a planet and he meets Lando and wins the Millennium Falcon and then he's taking his first job and he's working for Jabba the Hutt and that's the end of the movie. You know, and then 7 years later, he joins the rebellion.
I think some of the rumors I've heard is that there'll be dashes of those beats. Like, I would like to see how he met Chewie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see the Kessel run.
I don't need to see lame prequel bits that happened in some of the Craig Bond movies, I guess. I'm trying to think of an example. Like, I don't need to see him put on a vest for the first time and be like, wow, I look really good in a vest and boots. Like, I think the rumors I heard were that it's going to be a more character prequel, like that it's going to be like a bottle episode, like one event that he gets tied up in that shows how he kind of became the person that we know. Yeah. Kind of like an elongated version of the opening to Last Crusade.
Okay.
Where you get a little bit of both, but I don't think it'll be as literal as like...
Did we...
Here's the major events in Han Solo's
life. Yeah, I'm walking into the cantina now.
Yeah, like, it's not a Han Solo biopic.
Right, exactly.
Did we talk about this in the last pod when we talked about Indy? Did we mention hopefully they cast this guy as Indy? So whoever gets the guest Han Solo,
so he just gets his turn.
I think we talked about it off pod.
Here, sir. And here's your career handed to you on the next Jack Ryan.
And then he plays Regarding Henry again.
Yeah.
Which J.J. wrote, I didn't even know until Kyle told me that.
6 days, 7 nights.
Oh, God.
But who's going to be Schwimmer?
Dude, I forgot Schwimmer was in that movie. That chemistry between those two, Harrison Ford and Hayes, worst ever.
So bad.
Yes.
So bad.
What else do we got for Star Wars news?
Everybody starts with Star Wars news. Well, there's just a couple of things, like Warwick Davis was spotted on set. That's exciting news. Obviously, he's going to be part of it. Yes. I wanted to talk about this because there's been rumors that Billy Dee was part of Rogue One. No,
Billy Dee Williams.
He's part of Rogue One. He's on the 8 set.
Yeah. And I like that idea, but you guys didn't like that idea.
No, I don't. I saw him in person like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was less like meeting Lando and more like meeting Jabba. You don't.
But they can do wonderful things with CG these days.
Well, then just give me a motion captured like
Andy Lando. Serkis is Lando Calrissian.
He was struggling to like move or speak. Mm. So he's just old. He's just
not old enough.
He is, but I mean, I don't need him to be a big part of the action, but.
It'd be kind of cool.
It'd be kind of cool if they went to go. Why? Because Lando never really. I mean, in Empire, he didn't do a lot of action. Well, he did a
it's
little
not
bit
action. More. It's just that he's a vivacious, like engaging.
He
character.
Is. But what if? What
and
if?
It's not. Think about how sparingly they used Leia in Force Awakens, which I don't necessarily agree with, but it's because Carrie Fisher didn't hold up as well as Harrison Ford did. Like, if you're going to run into Lando Calrissian, you want it to be Lando Calrissian, not like your grandpa at the retirement home. It's just sad.
I would agree with that. Yeah, but I didn't feel that way about Leia. I thought she was just fine.
No.
I mean, not just fine. I shouldn't say, like, I love Leia. I thought she was great. Like,
I didn't either.
She
I think
felt
she'll
like
the
princess.
She'll have a bigger part in the next two, definitely. With Harrison, you know.
I mean, Han's send-off.
Yeah, right. yeah. But no, I agree with Josh. The Joshes are united on this. I think having a geriatric Lando Calrissian is a detriment to the character.
Yeah, it won't be a pop moment. It'll be a...
That's sad. He used to be so... Oh. Yeah, I mean, it would be cool. It would be cool to see him, yes. But maybe it'll be some sort of transmission and it'll be his voice or something like that.
I mean,
that.
The dude's almost 80, so I don't know what.
Well, yeah.
And he's supposed to be 80 in the story, so I don't mean.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Plus, that might be making the world too small again. Like, one thing The Force mm-hmm. Awakens did really well is, no, this really is a big universe. If it's like they're running around, I don't know what they'll be doing in episode 8, but if they're running around trying to do something, they bump into Lando on the street, like.
I don't think they're bumping.
But Lando. But if Rey's somebody's daughter and they go to Lando for help, and right. then Snoke ends up being somebody we know,
right.
then it's all just
you're compacting.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah, which I want. You guys don't, but I do. So I guess we're just gonna have to agree to disagree there. But yes, I want it all to be connected. I want it all to matter because this is the episode.
Just because it's not connected doesn't mean it doesn't
matter. The episodes.
That's what I was saying.
To me, it won't. The episodes. The episodes are the Skywalker.
Yeah, well, that's why you have Rey. That's the connection. Snoke doesn't have to be somebody else. And if this trilogy was made by George Lucas, then you would have had Lando in a shop being like, BB-8, I built him.
Snoke is Watto.
Yeah, like it would have been that small.
Well,
yeah, and that's a disservice to a universe of stories.
I think that's the whole point of these. Like I said, the episodes though, they're contained to this group of people, and then they're going to tell these stories eventually. That
they're contained to Skywalkers.
They are,
but not Calrissians.
He's part of it. He's part of it.
But why are we fighting? I don't like it. Oh wait, I do. We're discussing it. It's
yeah,
good.
Yeah. So that's pretty much Star Wars. But I was just gonna mention because it seems like every time we do get on Star Wars, we can't stop talking about Star Wars.
True.
So I thought maybe we had another idea, actually, all of us, and maybe you can tell us about that, Mr.
Oh, well, it was actually your idea.
But not the title.
But no. I was
but
just
not the to, title.
Hey, I just wanted to give you credit. We might be, and it could end
I
up
said
up,
we. I said we.
Oh, yeah, it might end up applying to other things as well, but Star Wars is such a big topic that we might start doing bottle pods called escape pods for Star Wars.
Podlings, if you will.
Star Wars themed pods. 15, 20 minutes when... the news is there and applies, so we don't.
Yes. Or we want to get these heated debates about
run ramshackle.
What kind of Star Wars we want?
We all want the same Star Wars.
We just want it to be good.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah, that's the most important.
Red Letter Media is about to release their Force Awakens review, which I feel like is a little bit of a reach.
Ooh.
Are you familiar? The guys that did the feature length takedown of like Phantom Menace and the other. Prequels.
No, I don't know who these guys are.
You've never, as a prequel defender, you should watch.
You should.
I'm not a prequel defender. I'm just a guy who likes them. I never said they were
good
movies.
Yeah, but I'm just, like, you should. They blew up the internet when they came out, and he's about to release his Force Awakens.
There is no way this dude has anything in his arsenal that I haven't heard already about the prequels. There's no way.
Yes, there is.
It is very in depth. And
it's very illuminating.
Yes. And it's very like, here's how you tell a story.
Yeah.
Here's how the prequels don't.
I remember I was like, wow, it's like really dark and funny, but like also really insightful about like writing in general. It's almost like a good course on like plot construction.
Is this guy a writer?
The first thing, I don't know, but the first thing he says like in the first 10 minutes of the video is, okay, question, even if you like The Phantom Menace, who is the main character?
Anakin Skywalker.
No. Because he's not even introduced until like that you gotta watch it, but like that's
and he shows up half an hour in
right his Force Awakens.
Ah, yes. Oh, I'm sorry. If we're going by a textbook definition of stuff, you're probably right. So that's what we're talking about here, right?
Anyway, just check it out.
I probably won't. But moving on. So anyway, moving on. I think I asked you guys last week. I think I mentioned this at the end of the pod. I was going to say, pick your favorite Disney movies from the three. How many areas have we come up with?
The classic area, the not so classic area, the modern awesome era, and non-Disney.
Non-Disney.
So the criteria is the classic era is from Snow White to Sword of Stone.
Yeah.
And then I was going to look up when Robin Hood came out because I think Robin
72.
Hood
started.
You did. Yeah. I was right. So Robin Hood came out in 72. So Robin Hood, even though I think it should be thrown in the classics, but we'll start it there. Robin Hood to Oliver and Company, which came out in 86, I believe. And then there was a lull there for a few years until Little Mermaid came out and blew the doors off, and then Beauty and the Beast started winning Oscars.
Oliver and Company was the year before Little Mermaid.
So it was 88.
Little Mermaid was 89.
Nice. Okay, 88. Yeah. Oh, 89.
I know.
I remember seeing that.
They just rewrote the formula. Yeah.
Yeah, so Little Mermaid to Tarzan, I think, is a good ending. That's where those kind of ended. And then anything beyond that, so Emperor's New Groove and Lilo and Stitch and Treasure Planet. And when Disney kind of went away from the big fairy tale musical spectacle.
And then gave it another shot again with Princess and the Frog and...
Yeah,
are we counting all the way up to Zootopia then?
Yeah, let's go all the way up from there.
So it's Zootopia.
And Pixar's don't count because they're their own thing. Actually, we'll add that to it. Pick your favorite Pixar movie and then non-Disney. So that's a lot of them. But anyway, so let's do Potter's list.
All right. In order, I guess, Bambi would be my first from the classic era.
Good one.
And I know we're not going to talk about every single one, but that is the first Disney movie that I remember seeing with my mother in the theater.
Nice. That's a good one.
Did your mom get shot?
She did not, actually, thankfully. And the theater didn't catch on fire, forcing me to run away.
Good.
So, you know, that's good, right?
Good.
Right?
Yeah.
I would like to mention, though, that technically that is not the first Disney movie I saw. First one I saw was Song of the South, which is never mentioned.
You can't get that. You'll never get that.
I know, right? You'll never get it. And no one knows, or at least so many kids today don't know where Brer Rabbit and all those other characters come from on Splash Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Because the movie is sealed in the vault for all time, apparently. So
it's available at a certain clan meeting.
Okay, so
one crazy thing about Bambi, and we'll leave it at that, leave it alone. I think I want to say the list of scariest childhood villains. The man who shot Bambi's mom is number two.
Ooh.
Because of all the damage it did to kids.
Yeah,
that was,
I could
believe that movie is pretty powerful.
Yep.
Continue.
Okay, so from the next era, I would say Oliver and Company, just because I watched the shit out of that movie.
I love that movie, the Billy Joel song.
So good, yeah, yeah. Wasn't that accepted, but whatever. It was great.
It's
and
cute
then,
now. Kids will love it now if you show your kids.
Yeah, definitely. And then from the if we're going by when I was a kid, which is kind of how I operated, I would say Aladdin, but I also really love The Emperor's New Groove.
Well,
so,
those are separate eras.
I guess they are.
Emperor's New Groove is the later. After Tarzan,
Post sequelitis.
Yeah.
So yeah, Aladdin and then Emperor's New Groove.
All right. How about Pixar?
Pixar, I'm going to have to go with WALL-E. I really love WALL-E.
I love WALL-E too.
It's such a poignant piece about society.
I'm
going to
have to say
you can tell a movie with two robots that barely say anything. I love that.
It's an absolutely beautiful movie, especially that first half. Second half's good too, but that first half is just
And the love story in it is still better than Twilight.
Such a good love story.
Wow.
And it's two robots.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. How about favorite non?
So is Twilight.
Again, operating on that's good.
Thank you.
operating on the purely kid level of childhood memories, I would have to go with An American Tale for favorite non-Disney movie.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good call. And An American Tale was directed by Don Bluth, who was one of Disney's top animators for many years. So.
He had his own little mini empire.
He did. Started with American Tale, Land Before Time, Rock-A-Doodle. All Dogs Go to Heaven. I could talk about Bluth for a week. I could do a whole pot on Bluth. Anyway, so I'm going to throw the next one to Kyle.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I was not expecting that.
Exactly. Like hot
potato.
That's why
I did it.
Hot potato.
Their head was already in shit.
So, super old school classic. I'm going with Pinocchio.
Nice.
It's just great.
Fun fact about Pinocchio, probably Disney's best movie, was not a big hit at the time.
Well, there you go. People are dumb. okay, now my not so classic era is, I think it's still a classic, amazing movie. Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
Good call.
It's three stories. sort of put together in feature length. Winnie the Pooh and the Blustery Day is just the best ever. Heffalumps and Woozles Steal Honey. Mm. Some great songs in it, too.
There are.
Which is, like, unexpected. I don't know. It's great. I love it. The neoclassic era, if you will, Lion King.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, to me, the top three...
Would you just
three...
skip Lion King and... okay.
No, I'm just like, okay.
To me, like, the top three Disney animated movies are Lion King, Aladdin, and Little Mermaid.
Mm, interesting.
Like, pick of any era. So, it's Lion King is, you know, number one with Aladdin being just...
Not Beauty and the Beast, huh?
Beauty and the Beast is good. It's just not... I don't know. I don't... Like, it's not... Oh, my God.
I feel you.
Beauty and the Beast doesn't have any hidden sex stuff in it.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it does. I think the old man says or does something, the father or something. I can't remember. I have to look it up, but I could be wrong.
Maybe.
But I remember, I think I heard something about that.
I haven't seen many of the modern Disney movies. Like, I think I saw Emperor's New Groove once. I remember seeing...
Did you see Lilo?
Well, they weren't that
good. I didn't
good.
See Lilo, no. Simple. I did not see Lilo. I didn't see Princess and the Frog. I didn't see Tangled. So I don't know that
I
even
I like
have
Tangled
one.
More than Frozen. Watch out, 8-year-old girl.
Oh, I forgot about Frozen.
What?
I liked Frozen. I didn't love Frozen.
Well, you can call Frozen, I guess.
Frozen's pretty good. I guess I'll say Frozen.
No, you should say Big Hero 6.
Oh, Big Hero 6.
Oh, are we counting that?
Yeah.
Oh, well, then Big Hero 6.
Zootopia
2? Oh, Zootopia 2. I don't know. Zootopia is too recent for me
to...
You have to digest that one a little
bit. To choose that one. Yeah, I'm going to go with Big Hero 6. Big Hero 6 is pretty great. And then, Pixar. I would say either The Incredibles or the first 10 minutes of Up.
Ooh.
I mean, all of Up is great, but that first 10 minutes is just...
Oh, yeah,
really
that
love
story
maybe
is
the best
beautiful.
Thing Pixar's ever done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then non-Pixar, this is or non-Disney, this is absolutely a cheat, and I don't care, fuck all of you, Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Nice. Yeah.
Touchstone.
That's kind of Disney as well.
It's kind of Disney. Yeah. It's kind of everyone.
But it was,
but
it was just...
It's not...
I'll give it to you.
Disney.
Okay. It's not technically fully animated, but I'll give it to you.
No, it's absolutely not fully
put
animated.
It like,
for
out
kids,
of its
really.
So it could be, so they didn't have to associate with like its darker elements.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did that with a lot of stuff, like Rocketeer.
Rocketeer is so good.
Rocketeer
yes.
is so good. That movie is, Roger Rabbit is so important though, because of the fact that Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse shared a screen, and that's almost as big as Batman and Superman sharing a screen.
Mm-hmm. And they negotiated every second
yes.
of that.
Yeah.
Who came on screen first, who left first, what they were
right.
doing, who was at a different height.
One
like,
of the
it
biggest
was all
reasons,
full on negotiating.
One of the biggest reasons why we didn't get a sequel, because it was just too hard.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll never happen.
Because you can't, you can't not have all those characters in it again.
Yeah.
All right, Morehead.
Classic era, probably Peter Pan.
Okay.
Good one.
That's yeah. nice.
Just because of the racism and sexism, you know.
Hey, I hate to say it, but I love that "What Makes the Red Man Red" song. It's so racist, but I love that song.
It's just kind of a beautiful movie. And I wanted to give a shout out to Mary Poppins.
That's a good call.
Yeah.
That's another one like Roger Rabbit. Only partial is animated, but
in the Dip
good
era.
Call. Good call.
Probably well,
Dip.
It's
what?
It's got to be
a little lull.
The Great Mouse Detective, which I watched over and over with a runner-up to The Rescuers Down Under.
That's
Rescuers.
The only Rescuers movie I saw. I didn't see the first.
There's
one.
Two of them. Yeah, the second one's better.
The Rescuers Down Under is better, and I watched like 15 minutes of it on Netflix like 2 months ago. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
those shots with the birds flying in the canyon. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Modern era Lion King just can't be beat.
No.
And postmodern era probably Big Hero 6.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Pixar, right. Finding Nemo, and
good
non-Disney. I watched way too much Rockadoodle when I was a kid. and we watched it in college. We like tracked it down at a video store. We're like, Rockadoodle night! And then like 15 minutes in, we're like, oh, this is horrendous.
Yeah, that was towards the end of Bluth's golden run there. And I don't know if he made very many after that. If he did,
I think
any.
Rockadoodle may have killed the whole.
Yeah,
era.
Because they made like
say him.
Yeah,
they made 18 Land Before Time, but I don't think that counts.
The Dinosaur Story was after that, but I don't remember if that
was that
Bluth
or
not.
That
I think it was
been.
Bluth involved.
I'll have to look it up.
Pagemaster? No, that's not it.
No. Pagemaster was great though. I love Pagemaster.
All right, I'll go quick. I don't really have much because you guys picked a lot of my favorites, which is good. But my favorite classic used to be Peter Pan, But over the years, for some odd reason, Lady and the Tramp has become my favorite. I don't know what it is about that movie, but I think it's magical from start to end. And I love the animals in it, and I love that song in the jail or the pound. I friggin' He's a Tramp song. the not so hot era. My favorite is Black Cauldron. I used to have a record of that before. I'm old enough that they didn't even have Disney movies. Actually, they were Disney movies being released on VHS at that time, but they did not release the Black Cauldron for many years because people thought it was too dark.
Yeah,
it is kind of scary. The Horned King is kind of creepy for kids. I don't think I'd show my nieces it right now.
I've never seen it.
Oh, I'll let you borrow it. You'd love it. It's
a graphic novel. Yeah, of it. It's fantastic. Even that, the images are creepy.
I love the record so much. Like, I listen to it so much. The post Little Mermaid era, the new classic. I'm with you guys, Lion King. I think Lion King is by far the best Disney animated movie of all time, if not one of the best. It was one of the best movies ever made. It's just so good, and it was somewhat of an original story. Like, it wasn't based. I don't think it was based on any.
Except that Japanese movie that was like exactly the same.
Right. Well, yeah, but I mean, it wasn't based on a fairy tale.
Right. No,
I mean, Hamlet.
It was Hamlet. Disney's first.
It was Hamlet. Good call.
It was Disney's first original.
Yeah, like animated. Somewhat original story. Yeah. Like, they didn't have to say based on the Hans Christian Andersen. Right. Whatever. And then kind of that middle era, I would have to say Lilo and Stitch. I love the character of Stitch. He's a great creation. But more so the little girl Lilo. She's freaking adorable. That voice actor who did that was like, obviously she can't stay a kid forever, but I wish they would have recorded 80 movies with her because she was adorable. And then favorite Pixar, it's a toss-up. I can never choose between WALL-E and The Incredibles, which you guys both mentioned. Like, just both of those movies are fantastic. But I would probably have to give a slight edge to WALL-E just because it's so gorgeous.
The
Incredibles is so well written.
I owe those movies a revisit because, I mean, I like Incredible, but those are two of, like, they rank lower on the Pixar's.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it's really hard for me, and to say this, Pixar's really hard for me to pick because it's so hard for me not to say Toy Story 3 because how amazing is that?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Bald.
Yeah.
How did I not say Toy Story? Shit.
I know. It's almost like I have to take the Toy Story trilogy off the table.
Right.
Because it's just so amazing. And, you know, anybody could say those are their favorite movies and nobody would argue.
Katie and I are about to go back and revisit, like, everything Pixar except for Cars.
Well, don't see I still have not seen Cars 2.
We watched it like 3 or 4 months ago. It's okay.
Cars or Cars 2?
Cars.
Okay.
Cars 2.
I have no desire to see Cars 2. I saw.
I wanted just because it was Pixar and it was released in
the
theater.
Did you know that the working title of Cars 2 was Coat Hanger Abortion?
Wait. Moving on. Did they do planes? That wasn't Pixar.
That was Disney.
That was Disney.
Okay. That was when.
But it was in the Cars world, wasn't it?
No. Well, okay. That's what's fascinating about planes is it came out.
Is there anything fascinating about planes?
It was Disney's fuck you to Pixar when they're in contract negotiations whether Pixar was going to go to another studio, and they're like, if you go to another studio, we're going to do this over and over and over,
just
kind of over. Like, we're going to take your properties. And stretch the legalese as much as we can, and we're gonna make Dane Cook voice everything. And then, what happens to your product when you're distributing it at Fox? And they're like, "Oh yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll stick around. All good." Anyway, all right. So moving on to the last two subjects of the night. Number one, I issued a challenge last week, and something we're gonna do every time. Hopefully, you have a movie to throw out. Okay, so. A movie that absolutely should positively not be rebooted, remade, possibly sequelized, but we won't talk about that. Rebooted or remade. These movies should never happen. I threw out The Godfather. Potter took up the challenge.
You have an impossible task, Potter.
I know.
It cannot be done.
It cannot be done. I shouldn't have started with the hardest one, although the thing that started this podcast was Back to the Future one, which is, I think, equally as hard as Godfather. But
did we mention what that was, by the way? Because that was great. When Kyle.
Nah, we'll save
that.
Okay. We'll save it. Yeah, we'll save that. If we didn't check back and make sure we didn't. But yeah,
I have a no. We didn't talk about it.
So Potter, let's start with the director.
I would do a writer-director the same person. Okay. I think this person is strong enough to do both based on his repertoire.
Nope.
Now guaranteed. Okay, guaranteed. I'm on board with this whole, like, this should never, ever happen and never be done. And even my list that I've come
up
with.
You just got to, all you got to do is convince me
this is the best of the worst circumstances.
Yes, exactly. Because I don't think, this is a classic. It shouldn't be remade. Okay, so I would go with Frank Darabont as a writer-director.
Okay,
I didn't know you were going to go there. That's,
because he has done movies like The Green Mile, Shawshank Redemption. He did a TV show for Amazon, technically called Mob City. He's just a really strong writer. I mean, he worked on Walking Dead, Be It What It Was, for a couple seasons, and left with creative differences. Right. Who cares?
I guess
doesn't matter.
I'm still no, but that's enticing.
That's a very good one.
It's unexpected.
It's
very
expected.
But
good call,
Potter. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah. And he's got the directing chops.
He does. He's
to do it.
I love Frank Darabont. I should read in his indie script. I wish they gave him the new indie job instead of Cop. But let's move on.
Okay. So then as far as our main cast goes, the people you mentioned. So for Vito, which, again, impossible. How do you cast somebody instead of Marlon Brando? But I came up with James Gandolfini. He is a veteran of the genre.
He's dead.
Well, okay.
I should have said that. It should be somebody alive.
He's the only one
with the fishes.
okay. I'll give you that one because I didn't specify that.
He's the only one on the list that is gone.
But going on further, people need to be alive.
Yeah.
If he was still around.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's the right kind of.
I'm not giving
you
that one.
No, I'm not giving you that one either.
Well, okay.
And also, if he was alive,
to remake
I would
the movie.
Sit around here and wait for him to pick another one.
No, not at all. He doesn't have a veto. He could
have
said
Ross. You have a second choice.
You're vetoing the veto.
Yeah.
Ah, man.
If you come up with one by the end.
I'll tell
you what. No, I'll tell you.
You
have a second choice.
I'll tell you who it is. It's Robert De Niro.
Oh, fuck.
Jesus
Christ.
All right. I like Robert De Niro.
Okay. You know what? Darabont.
God damn it.
And De Niro is the. Yeah,
God
yeah.
damn it.
Who was your other one?
All right. So, just because he's a fantastic actor and I think he could pull it off, and I think it's a kind of out of the blue casting choice.
Yeah.
Victor Garber.
For who?
For Vito.
I like him a lot. That's a good. You're good on the out of box thinking cast.
Interesting.
I like that. But still, within the realm of makes sense because Victor Garber is amazing.
Yeah.
And he was a great father in Alias where he was in.
Right?
You know,
right?
I like that.
He can
play
the fatherly figure, but I feel like he's.
Both of those actors, I'm still not 100% in, but. That
well,
Darabont and both of those actors.
Can we be
100%
in? I mean,
no. That's the
point.
That's the challenge.
But
that's the challenge.
All right. So for Michael Corleone, big part, obviously, Al Pacino, originated the role. Also, an out-of-the-box casting choice, Milo Ventimiglia.
No.
Interesting.
He's good. But he just,
is he?
Just wait. Because
I liked him in Rocky Balboa.
There's one other one that on my list that could be interchangeable. And
after
I wrote it, I was like, I might flip it. So when we get to that one,
You were doing really good.
I mean, probably.
So, yeah.
You probably
would
flip it.
Probably.
So, how about Sonny?
But he has the intensity, I think. Milo does. Anyway, so for Sonny,
not the ability.
I went with John Bernthal as Sonny.
Okay, I like that.
He looks older. He's got the intensity. He plays the older son anyway.
Yeah.
So.
He's fantastic as the Punisher, which we'll talk about Daredevil season 2 next week because none of us have watched it all yet.
Yeah.
But Bernthal's fantastic. I like that.
For Tom Hagen, Christoph Waltz, I think would be a good Tom Hagen.
He definitely would have to. Speaking an American accent, though.
He would, but I think he could do it. And I think it would be another one kind of out of the box thinking.
I veto because he's a little too old for me. I would
want to be
fair
for Tom because
that's fair.
Tom did grow up with Sonny, so he has to be the same age as Sonny.
I would want to update it for this era and go outside the box even further than like what a white guy in an Italian family and make it like Idris Elba or something.
Ooh, yes.
That's a good idea. Okay. If you still said it in the 50s, though, could you get away with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
there were black people in the 50s.
Were there black people working with the mob in the 50s?
No, but in my mind, we were doing a modern day take, possibly too.
Yeah,
if we were setting in a modern era, yeah.
But then you'd have to add like the family.
I think
IT
it even works
guy,
in the 50s.
Or like the family hacker,
which
I guess
I just
which
that,
would
right?
be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, keep going.
All right, and then you gave me Kay, Connie, and Fredo. Kay, Emma Watson. I think she could be a good Kay.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that.
She could pull it off. She's got the chops to do it, I think. You know? Yeah. I like Kyle. He's pontificating.
Well, I'm not against it.
And then for Connie, Rachel McAdams, I think, might be an interesting choice for Connie.
She would be, but...
And I think everybody's... Everybody's used to her in a certain type of role, I think. The kind of love interest or whatever, but she'd have to be a little harder.
Connie goes,
I saw True Detective season 2.
Connie goes through a very subtle transition, transformation like Michael does. It's a little not as explored as much as Michael's, but she's such a different person from the beginning of Godfather 1 to the end of Godfather 2. Completely different person. Actually, she changes from the middle of Godfather 2 to the end of Godfather 2.
Yeah.
So, Talia Shire did a fantastic job in that.
She did.
I want to hear your Fredo.
It's tough.
Now, Fredo is my favorite character in The Godfather.
So, Fredo, this
I should say my favorite performance, because John.
Seth Rogen.
Oh, God.
Zolly.
No, actually, for Fredo, and this is where, in hindsight, I would flip it, but I would also drop. Alden Ehrenreich could be a good Fredo, I think.
Yeah, right now I'm high up on that guy, so if you put him in there, I'd be better
as Michael. Yeah, absolutely.
But I would not put Milo as a...
But who would you cast as Apollonia?
I don't know.
Okay,
I don't know.
has Potter sold me on seeing this Godfather?
No.
I'd probably still see it, I won't lie. But... Definitely, Fredo needs a better casting, because I would change that, those two, like you guys said, and I don't think I'd put Milo anywhere near it. He has the right look, but he's kind of a one note pony. Like he was good in Heroes, but then he kind of got tired.
And the note's a little flat.
I liked him in Rocky Balboa, but and still at the same time.
I would cast Billy Dee Williams as Abe Vigoda's character, because he's all the confused.
Hashtag callback.
Well, but he should be... Actually, shouldn't he be the other one, since he was more like Jabba? So he should be the fat one. He should be Clemenza.
Yeah.
Fat
Clemenza. Oh, there we go. Okay.
Anyway, okay. So you enticed me enough to go see it on Blu-ray, but I don't know if I watched it in the theater.
I'll watch the first 10 minutes on HBO.
Direct-to-DVD release.
That's the kind of movie... That, if that were to happen and all that stuff would have happened, I would be intrigued, but the reviews would have to be overwhelmingly positive.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, so, as with any recast...
No, because me, I see anything. I see anything. All right. So what issue your challenge?
Okay. I think, since I have already mentioned it, Shawshank Redemption is my challenge. Because that one is also very hard to recast.
You are in the Darabont mode right there.
I am. Yes. It's a good segue into my challenge.
One of the greatest movies. Great movie. Good choice. One of you guys want to take up that challenge?
It's almost too new. No. Because you could just be like, yeah, I would just have them all do it over again.
That's true.
Well, yes, but...
Okay, but...
No, you said it in Mexico.
Think about it this way. It already has such a perfect or near-perfect
cast. The movie's
20
years old.
So...
Next year. So.
I guess we should set rules on this challenge.
No.
It's fine.
No, the only rule is they have to be alive. That's the only rule is
the actors have to be alive.
Actors and the director and writer have to be alive. So do you want to take this challenge, Josh? You sound like... Because that...
No, I don't want to take this one, because what I would do is I would just totally retool it to make it like the...
Like Let's Go to Prison, or...
Kyle,
yeah, like the Kyle, would you take version, this or Kyle, like you the want... black version, or like...
You want to take this on?
Sure.
All right, Kyle's going to take this one on. All right, so next week we'll talk about The Shawshank Redemption. All right, now moving on, the last bit of info we want to talk about, because we really want to talk about this movie, 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Fantastic.
In case you guys haven't seen, it's still playing out there. It's still doing pretty decent business. It's a spiritual quasi sequel to Cloverfield. It's not a direct sequel, even though by definition
it is
sequel,
not a sequel.
A
it's
sequel,
not a sequel.
A sequel furthers
involved.
A sequel it furthers the story.
And it did not.
The first one.
So.
Yes,
it's
it
a
did.
Different story.
Yes, it did. About
it's,
in the same world.
It's an
in a different world.
It's an
against
episode
a different
of an
kind of creature
series.
Yes. It's a sequel in the way that all Twilight Zone episodes are sequels.
There you go. They're all sequels.
In other words, not.
Yeah. It's
But big spoilers. Yeah, spoiler.
Huge.
If you haven't seen it and you're going to see it, turn it off now. If you haven't seen it and you're not going to see it, then
do whatever you want. Stay in the bunker with us.
Yeah, stay in the bunker.
I was just shocked.
We probably won't shoot you.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
I was just shocked that John Goodman was reprising his role as Fred Flintstone.
I mean, it was an unexpected turn.
Yabba dabba don't.
But seriously.
Yabba dabba die.
Yeah.
My bottle, like my mini review for that movie for like the rest of my days, unless I revisit it and feel like I was wrong, is that like it's maybe the most intense edge of your seat last 25 minutes of a movie that I've ever had, or at least in the past like 10 years or so.
Yeah. And it just builds tension throughout the whole thing just masterfully.
Yeah.
Which doesn't give you that release very often.
Which isn't to say other movies didn't like rivet me, like the first time I'm seeing Force Awakens, the last 25 minutes, or the whole 2 hours, I'm like, oh my God. But like, literally, I don't think you or I took a breath for 25 minutes.
I mean, that's what it felt like. Yeah. I passed out after the movie.
Yeah, it was. And it has the best line of the year so far. Come on. Come Which on. I'll let you explain because I have to pee really bad.
Thanks. See, the problem is I don't remember when she said come on versus when she said fuck.
Come on was when she was on top of the car and saw the ship for the first time.
Oh my God. That movie's just great. When she gets
That was the best line of the year?
So far.
Right. I mean, it might have been a good moment. Yeah, but I mean, the line isn't particularly.
Well, at least it was the perfect line for that moment.
It was the delivery of the line that was good. It was the delivery of the line. I'm giving the credit to the actress, but I'm just saying.
At least no one uttered our favorite line, forget everything you know.
Thank you, X-Men Apocalypse trailer. Yes. Thank you, everything.
One of the things I loved about it was John Goodman, just in general.
Yes, I love perfect. I don't think this is going to happen, but I love that people are talking Oscar about him.
Yes, I've seen at least one article about it.
I've seen several. Go ahead, sorry. Good. I interrupted
you. And how you go through the first three quarters of the movie. Is he telling the truth? Is he not telling the truth? Like, what's going on? And in the end, he's telling the truth, but he's still fucking nuts. And he can be both at the same time. And a lot of movies don't do that. He's either telling the truth or he's nuts. Yeah. And this one, he's both.
Yeah.
It's a very masterful performance.
Although he doesn't tell the whole truth. Well, we did mention we're going to say spoilers.
Well, right? he tells the truth as he knows it. Like, he's not lying when he says
no, about the
something happened, there was an attack.
Yeah. But he lies about, like, his daughter and the girl that he kidnapped.
Oh, yeah.
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 So
I mean, there's that.
There is some lying involved. I'm going to say this. I did not like the first Cloverfield. Oh, okay, I shouldn't say it like that. I just didn't love it like a lot of people did. I thought it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was rooting for the monster. I didn't care at all about the characters.
That's actually a typical response. There's a much more divided reaction to Cloverfield than there is to 10 Cloverfield.
Yeah, and you're right. Yeah. And it's not a sequel in the sense that because the movie doesn't. The movie's not shot the same. The movie doesn't have the same tone. It doesn't. I mean, it's a bottle movie. I don't know if that's what they call those. I mean, it takes place in a bunker the whole time. Except for like,
right.
And it takes place on the outside of that bunker at the end.
Yeah.
But I just thought all performers involved, all the actors were fantastic. Goodman was so great. Maria Elizabeth Winstead was John McClane. Like, she was even running around barefoot the whole freaking time. It was Die Hard in a bunker almost.
John Goodman was like... maybe the best depiction I've ever seen of like Midwestern creepy.
Yeah.
Like these,
paranoid, the paranoid, what do they call
like
them?
Like their conviction.
Survivalists.
Yeah, their conviction is so.
Doomsday.
Doomsday preppers.
Their conviction is just so real and they're so firm in their beliefs and they're not totally wrong, but there's just that twinge in their eye.
Yeah.
There's that punch at the table when you do something they don't like, or there's that vat of acid they keep around. That's very
cool. Well, I gotta tell you, in the big time spoiler here, when they kill off what's his name, the one dude, he has like a southern name, but I've never even heard of that actor. Apparently
he's on Newsroom.
Yeah, he was on Newsroom.
Okay, he was really good, but when he gets it, like even though for some odd reason I was expecting it still shocked me. Like, it was, like, it did...
Oh, I was totally shocked.
It did a great, like,
Yeah.
Because the way they set that up,
Because at first I was like, oh, they're not, he's going to do it. And then I was like, nah, no, he's
the way that beat works in most shows or movies or stories is you have that moment where they're confronting each other, and then the Buford guy, whatever his name is, like, says the lie, like, it was just me, and I'm really sorry. Yeah. And John Goodman
I wanted goes, to be respected like yeah. you.
And yeah. John Goodman says, awesome. Okay, and gives him a side eye, and you're like, oh, well, he's probably still fucked up. And then that, like, night, he kills him in his sleep, or the guy drops a plate in the sink, and that's the breaking point.
Yeah.
You don't usually, in the same moment that that happens, yeah. have to blow you away. That
yeah.
was the
that was a good thought, yeah. And he knew he was going to do it, you just didn't know it was going to happen right that right. second.
Yeah.
But he's doing the thing that you want everybody in every horror movie to do. He's not taking any fucking chances.
Right.
And he yeah, says to me, like, you heard him. He said he was making a weapon. He was going to attack us. We were not safe.
Yeah.
So I had to kill him.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And it made total sense. Yeah. That's a funny thing. Yeah. That's right. In the horror movies, that should be what you think. Like, just better be safe than sorry.
And Kyle and I were talking about this, I think, the day after we saw it, that it that movie tells stories the way that Bad Robot does, going back to Lost and most things where you can retrace the movie thematically and plot steps wise that every line of dialogue, every shot matters. Yeah. Where like in the first like couple of minutes of 10 Cloverfield Lane, you're like, why are they showing me her drawings of making dresses? Well, it's because later on she's going to build the suit that gets her out.
Yeah.
Why
yeah.
she? Why do we have this kind of boring scene where she's sobbing and saying she's a coward? I don't know how much
right.
I like that. Well, it's because this movie's actually about her story. So at the last moment when she has to choose to go to safety or go to the fight, she goes to the fight because she's changed as a person.
Right. Also, the bottle of alcohol in her apartment.
Yes.
It's just cameras resting on it and she walks by and it's gone. And it plays a huge role.
They're really adept at doing that. I forget what the rule's called, but it's like if you see a gun, the gun's going to be used. But Bad Robot does that.
Chekhov.
Yeah. They do that down the lines of dialogue, though, that everything's going to matter and pay off, which is kind of wonderful.
Yeah. It is. And they pay it off.
What did you say at the end? I must have dozed off at the end there. chose to go to the battle and chose to go to safety? I don't remember that.
Well, at the end, she has... She's listening to the radio, and there's two broadcasts competing. There's one saying there's safety in Baton Rouge, if I remember right, and one saying we're fighting back in Houston.
Yeah.
And she's got the
sign,
the freeway
says,
sign in front of her that says this way's basically this way's safety.
I do remember that part.
That way's fighting back, and she turns.
I'm sorry, I laughed. I thought you meant you fell asleep right now.
Oh,
that's what you meant. I was like, what?
No, I just meant like during the movie. I remember that entire scene, but I didn't remember. I didn't remember the competing.
And I'm not saying like it was really late that night. We were really tired, but that's why some people, like the people that didn't like Lost to me, or like were like, I don't get it. They were dead the whole time. It's because they're not paying attention to the level that like those works invite you to pay attention.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Where you get fulfilled if you did hang on every word or study every frame or whatever.
I mean, I remember when Lost was out, I remember I bought the first season of Lost, and that's the only season I owned for some reason. But I remember during the second season I kept going back and looking at things like, oh wait, was this there? Was that there? I mean, there was sometimes I remember there was a what was that one episode where there was like not an extra, but a crew member hiding behind a chair and someone caught that person and they were like, oh, there was somebody in a house.
Oh.
And they all thought it was supposed to be somebody who had died. Like it was Charlie, I think it was.
Yeah.
And they were like, that was Charlie. And then like it never paid off. But it was like, oh shit, that was actually you.
I could do a whole
thing behind. But
I could do 10 pods on Lost.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
To tie it back in, like that era of Lost, like 2005, 2006 was the best, like, was the beginning of cross promotion and also still the best cross promotion I've ever seen, where you'd watch Lost on ABC that night and then like 2 hours later on a different network the band that was playing like on the late night show would have a Dharma symbol on their on their, and they had commercials for Oceanic Airlines and you could call and book flights, like, and that's the commitment to detail that Bad Robot has. And I think if it's not a sequel, but the universe they're building for Cloverfield is that there'll be details that connect.
Yeah.
In the anthology.
I agree.
And if you pay attention, it's more rewarding.
I think there are things, and we could have a little podcast on Lost, but I can't remember.
And we probably will.
Well, you should.
Yeah. I got to go back and watch it again, because there's definitely things that probably didn't pay off, because they even admitted it. There's stuff that we started, you know, planting the root or the seeds, but we couldn't we couldn't finish it.
The only
I want to go back and find out what they were. The only one I had was Walt. Like I don't think Walt was explained the best, but that's no. The only one.
Yeah, the only true loose end there is in the entire series is that like when they're jumping in time, they're getting shot at by like a skiff.
Yes,
and then they just never did anything with that. They set it up so later it could be like that's
you know what
they were shooting at themselves.
Yeah,
but then they just kind of didn't have time. They
Lost is on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
All right. I think I'm gonna. As soon as I finish Burn Notice, which is taking me 7 freaking years to finish, not literally, but actually has. as soon as I finish that, I'm starting Lost. Anyway, so moving on. We all. Did you say anything about 10 Cloverfield Lane, Potter? I didn't hear you at all.
No, I agree. I said stuff.
God, said stuff and things and things.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm getting distracted. My family wants to hang out with me, and they're texting me and stuff, and I love them and everything, but we had some podcasting to do.
It's fine. It's so whatever. The Royals are the Dodgers in spring training.
Dodgers suck. So I got a little distracted during this podcast, but I think it was still fun, and as we said earlier, we're going to start doing a Star Wars podcast because it seems to take up way too much time in the regular podcast.
Exciting.
Escape Pod, by the way, nerd. Look forward to that, you kids. And any final thoughts, gentlemen?
I'm excited to see Midnight Special.
Yeah, we're about to go see Midnight Special.
Yeah, I wish I was joining you, but next, don't worry, I'll see you soon and we'll talk.
Yes.
Next podcast, we will talk about Midnight Special and our reactions to Batman vs. Superman.
Woo.
To my right is...
Kyle Bound.
Across from him.
Josh Morin.
Yes.
Joshua Potter.
Dana Villalobos. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. If you want more from the nerds, check us out on the intertubes at thewaywenerd.com. And if you haven't already, you should follow us on Facebook and Twitter at thewaywenerd, and subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next week, this is The Way We Nerd.